Hello and welcome to Rewatchable episode 31. Today we'll be discussing Veronica Mars episode 7, Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner, and 8, Ahoy Mateys. I'm Danielle, and with me is Karen, Caitlin, and Gabrielle. Hey everybody.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
I'm so excited to be recording with you today. I personally really like these two episodes in season 2. I don't know how you guys are feeling, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I think that these two were really intense, actually, and season 2 is really, I was a little worried about it, but I'm not so worried anymore, because I think in a lot of ways, it's a little bit darker and scarier than it has been.
Yeah. Oh, no, I definitely agree, yeah.
I tweeted about it yesterday that I'm liking this season way more than season 1 so far.
Yes, please. Have you come up with any explanation? I know you were kind of thinking about it.
I mean, I think it's just that the stakes seem way higher and it seems a little grittier, and I guess all the cases seem more adult, whereas the first season was very much focused on lots of high school drama and then this one murder case that goes on. And then this is like intense case after intense case, and maybe it's just because my favorite show deals with the apocalypse on a regular basis, so I like heavier weights, but I'm enjoying the darker, grittier heaviness of this season, I guess.
Good. I like to hear you say that, because I know a lot of people, their favorite is season 1, so it's nice to find people who enjoy season 1 but like the other seasons maybe a little bit better. I think it's interesting. And before we jump into these two episodes, at the end of the last podcast that we did, we were discussing the rat that was found. And I was wondering if anybody, I think that was like the biggest cliffhanger of those two episodes, if anybody had any thoughts about that before we got into these two episodes, if at all.
Wait, what?
At the end of episode 6, Mr. Mars finds a rat in the bus that was taken up from the ocean. And I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts about that at all. It was like a big discussion point that we hit in our last podcast episode. And since you weren't on it, I thought I'd give you a chance to maybe say anything of it all.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, I had no idea what it was.
Like, oh, yes. No, it was a rat. There was a rat taped to the underside of one of the seats on the bus.
That would explain the episode title, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay, I didn't get that at all.
Sorry. Yes, it was a rat. So I guess I'll let you guys just
Caitlin and I are like, oh.
I'm mind blown. I was like, I knew he found something, but did not register that that's what that was. Okay. Was maybe the lighting was bad. I don't know. I just did not register that at all.
It could be. Sorry to put you on the spot. Just give you something extra to think about then. Okay, so then we will jump right into episode 7, Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner. Here is a quick synopsis of it. The episode starts out with Veronica quoting the dude and Duncan looking bewildered when Logan interrupts the pair with makeout safe words. Kendall comes over for some Logan lovin' and a new sugar daddy. When Logan refuses, she goes to Duncan. Woody proposes incorporation of Neptune to Keith, which would cut out the poorer areas of Neptune, leaving them to fend for themselves. Logan asks Veronica to find out why the witness has come forward and tells Veronica that he does not remember, or he does remember the witness, and that guy that came forward is not him. Veronica poses as a client of Dr. Thomas Griffith, a plastic surgeon and the so-called witness, but he tells her she's perfect, so it doesn't really get very far. She then follows him to a cigar shop known to be a hangout of Fitzpatrick's, so it seems like he isn't. Duncan and Veronica investigate the boys Meg used to babysit to see if they've been abused, only to find it was Orland's sister Grace. During the investigation, Veronica attends a sleepover at Gia's, who wants to make closer girlfriends. Then, Duncan and Veronica break into the Manning's house and find Grace in a closet, but Sheriff Lamb comes and gets them. He lets them go, and it's revealed that his father used to be abusive. So there are quite a few things going on in this episode, but let's start with the Duncan and Veronica relationship. How do we see their dynamics playing out? It seems like Veronica is almost the man, I guess, in the relationship. don't know. What were you guys' thoughts on it after seeing it in this episode?
Their relationship is just kind of going down for me. I mean, I never hated them together or anything. And like I said on one of the previous episodes, I really want to like Duncan. But it just seems like, I mean, this scene right here when Logan comes in and they're watching the movie, it just highlights that Logan kind of gets Veronica a lot more, and they actually have a lot more in common than Duncan and Veronica do. And I just, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, come on, wake up, Veronica. You know, are you holding on to Duncan because of what you used to have before or what you have now?
Yeah, I agree. I think that Duncan, I mean, he's supposed to be a smart guy, but, you know, according to Veronica, he's supposed to have done really well on his PSATs and just be bright. But he doesn't come off that way. Logan and Veronica have the banter, which I think reflects intelligence. And so the fact that Veronica is the one quoting the Big Lebowski and Duncan's like, can you stop being the man in this right now? I think reflected their relationship a little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't come across as even in any way. Like, Duncan's kind of there, I guess, maybe as a safety blanket, and Veronica is way beyond what Duncan can offer her, I think. I mean, I think that's what I see it as. Duncan is acting like a safety blanket when that's the last thing Veronica needs.
Yeah, but then we assume, or we get the hints that he kind of turns the opposite of safety blanket when Kendall walks into his room and we don't know what happens. So I thought that was really interesting too.
Easy Duncan.
Oh my God.
Like he doesn't do anything. He just kind of like sits around. And then all of a sudden, like Kendall, it didn't make any sense, but it did at the same time. I don't know.
He makes the point of being like, I'm a boy. Like, of course I'm going to be interested in whatever. So
exactly.
Yeah. Like, don't like you right now, Duncan.
Yeah. This was about the time, my first time around, where I started not liking Duncan.
Agreed. I mean,
it's just,
In this episode, like, it's really ambiguous of whether or not he cheated on Veronica. And I still don't know. I'm just like, okay, she went into your room. According to Logan, she was in there for a while. Like, what happened?
And it also, this scene also kind of shows that Logan is a better person than Duncan. I mean, even though we never really thought of him as a worse person, but Logan calls Kendall out right away for what she's doing and tells her to leave. And Duncan just invites her right in. Or so we're assuming. At least he invites her into the room for a while. So, I don't know. I'm proud of Logan for standing her up and like telling her to leave.
Me too.
Logan's got boundaries, I guess. He knows what he wants and as far as he's willing to go with it, and then no further. So what he wants and what he's willing to do might be kind of skeezy, like having an affair with an older woman, but he still has boundaries.
It's definitely a good thing. Let me see. Moving on, we got one scene during this episode where I guess Mayor Goodman was talking about some of the things that he wanted to do with Neptune, and one of them was incorporation. What do you think of that idea and how it would affect everything that's going on now, especially since we're having these class wars? Or did you not really care?
I didn't necessarily care too much about it, but thinking about it now, I think it would have a big impact on everything. And I mean, in terms of the show, like if they decide to go in this direction, I think it would actually make it more interesting and kind of do more of what Caitlin was talking about with making the, you know, mysteries of the week more adult, a little bit scarier. I think it would actually benefit the show if they decided to do something like this.
I kind of, as soon as he left on the golf cart or whatever, I just had like this sinking feeling in my stomach, like no good can come of this. And I just felt very wary of wherever this was going because the racial tensions have been seriously heightened this season. So I can only see this being a bad thing.
Yeah, it's like even Mr. Mars says he wouldn't be able to live in Neptune with what they were planning on doing. So basically it would just be the 09 or zip code and that's it. So I don't know. It's something to keep an eye on. And it kind of it gives us a little bit of an insight into Mr. Goodman and himself, I think, because we've seen him as Gia's dad. We've seen him as the owner of the Sharks. And then we've also seen him on the baseball field with his baseball team, the little kids, that one time where he was trying to resolve the tensions between his team and the local kids who wanted to play. And so I think all of these things are giving us different glimpses into, I guess, how Mr. Goodman works. And we even see one later on, once we get into our abuse chat, we'll see another aspect to his personality in that as well. But before we get to that, I just wanted a quick touch on why you think Veronica was right to refuse to help Logan at first. Or do you think she was? Like to say, I don't do that anymore. You're kind of on your own.
I don't think she was right. I think she was kind of being a little vindictive, which I completely understand given their history. But I mean, he was being genuine. It's not like he was making fun of her saying like, look, I don't want to ask for your help, but can you help me? He was kind of being vulnerable. So I think it was just a natural defense mechanism of hers to kind of blow him off at first, which I get, but I kind of wish that she had been a little bit more mature in that situation.
I think maybe it was mature, though, in the sense that she's trying to keep a line between what she and Logan had and then what she and Duncan currently have and how there have been a lot of issues there. So by pushing Logan off, it's easier to keep the boundaries. But Logan genuinely did need help. So, you know, if he genuinely needs it, she should. But I can understand the desire to keep the two separate, considering the issues that we've seen that have come between them.
Yeah, and I think the truth of the matter is that she still has feelings for Logan, and she doesn't want to risk anything that she has by, you know, being in more contact with Logan and possibly, you know, rekindling some of what they had before. So it's... I think she should have been a little bit nicer about it, considering how much that he's gone through recently, but I do understand why her initial reaction was like that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it was just kind of self-preservation more than being vindictive or something like that. Okay. So let's move into, I guess, the big mystery of the week. I personally really enjoyed this one. This is actually one of my favorite episodes of season two and maybe even of Veronica Mars in general. Because I don't want to say I like the way they dealt with child abuse because they didn't deal with it per se, but I like the way they presented it as it could have been anyone. And I really enjoyed this story. I don't know how you guys felt about it. Any initial thoughts?
I definitely wasn't prepared for how intense this episode was going to be, and I found myself really sort of struck by what they did. And like you said, you know, she was looking for this one case of abuse and kind of stumbled upon a whole bunch of them. And in different ways, too, you know, you had like the parents locking the one kid in the closet, and then you had the mother who was, I'm assuming, abusing the boy for what he was doing, and just a lot of other things. And the way that they showed it in so many different incarnations, I think, was interesting. But yeah, I would say like my one disappointment is that it wasn't dealt with more than they showed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of wish Sheriff Lamb had arrested Manning or done something instead of just, you know, watch his house, although I think that was a big step in Sheriff Lamb's character development. I really liked how they handled it, but it bothered me with Veronica's teacher, how they kind of accused her of abuse, and I just had a difficult time saying, well, she's a single mom, she's really stressed out, and I didn't necessarily see what she was doing as abuse. I don't know if you guys do.
I didn't. I mean, she's a single mom living on a teacher's salary, like crappy hours, bad money, single mom. That's hard. So I kind of thought, though, with Lamb, did he really have anything he could have arrested the Mannings on? Like, he found the closet and he had what Veronica told him, but is that enough to actually go ahead and arrest him, or is it just enough to, I'm going to keep an eye on you?
I have a feeling he would have arrested them if they hadn't been from the 09er district of Neptune. That was my sense of it. Because they do have the notebooks. They have, you know, if they could get Grace to testify along with Meg's emails and Veronica and Duncan, maybe something could have been done. So I think Sheriff Lamb wanted to do something, but maybe was prevented because they are rich and wealthy and powerful.
Just seemed really circumstantial. Like, when you put the pieces together, it makes sense, but there was nothing hard that you could charge him with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was probably his thought process, because at the end of the episode, we see him come back and sit outside of the Mannings' house to observe. So I think you're right. I think it was mostly circumstantial. Like, they could have made a case that their child, or that Grace, just enjoyed writing those things in a notebook, or like made a different excuse for why there were so many notebooks full of that phrase.
And she had OCD or something.
Yeah. So I feel like they needed the hard evidence, which wasn't there, even though we see that Don Lamb believes them. And I think because he's lived through it firsthand, he probably knows what they can convict on and what they can't. Maybe like over and above what he knows about the law in general. Maybe he had some experience where they couldn't convict. I don't know. I mean, we don't really know, but that was kind of a feeling I got.
I also feel like it was more realistic that nothing happened, because, you know, Veronica Mars, a lot of times things are tied up so well, but in real life, you know, abusers do get away, unfortunately. So.
Yeah, I could definitely see that too. Do we think it was interesting in general that it was the Mannings who were the abusers? After all the things that we kind of heard about them, was it a shock that it was them, or could you see it fitting with their personality types?
After what we saw at the hospital when they were really nasty to Duncan, it didn't surprise me as much.
Okay.
I was surprised, like, if you would have asked me, you know, an episode or two ago, I would have been really surprised. But as soon as it was brought up that Meg, you know, was emailing the social services people and trying to figure out what they could do about abuse, I was like, oh, wait a second. And I kind of figured it out ahead of time. But I guess what's more shocking to me is that her parents were like this, and yet Meg was such an amazing person, and that she was so kind, and, you know, she was socially adept, and it was just really interesting to learn and to see that somebody like Meg could have been through the things that she went through.
I mean, you also see her sister Lizzie, though, so I think they just have different reactions to what they've been through, if we're to assume that all have been abused in the family.
Right.
Do you guys find it surprising that Duncan didn't pick up on anything, even though he seemed to have known Meg so well and, you know, have gone to all her babysitting sessions? Or so it seemed.
Not really. I feel like that's something that the Mannings have done really well to cover up. And so I guess it wouldn't really surprise me. And plus, like, I don't know, Duncan, like we were saying before, he just doesn't pick up on things the way that Logan does. Logan sort of kind of knows what's being said between the lines and stuff like that. And I don't really see Duncan being that way.
Yeah, I agree. Just, it doesn't really seem something obvious enough that Duncan would pick up on, which makes me sad because he's supposed to be very smart, but he's not written that way.
And I think, I mean, in terms of picking up, again, I think it was interesting that it kind of showed, I guess, something good about Don Lamb that he picked it up, because usually he always assumes that Veronica's lying. He enjoys arresting her. He enjoys almost harassing her. But he can pick up on it, even if he wasn't around to see any of the proof.
I was so proud of him during that scene. I was just like, complete 180 in my eyes, that, you know, now a lot of things make sense. And even still, like, you know, it doesn't justify how mean he can be, but he just got this whole other side to him that I was, you know, really impressed with. That they did it in like a single line, really. He said that one line and all of a sudden you know so much more about him. And I mean, that is really good writing.
Agreed. That just 180, absolutely.
Does that give you maybe a little bit more sympathy towards Don Lamb then?
Absolutely. Okay. I definitely feel more sympathetic. I'm not going to forgive him for how much of a jerk he can be, but there's definitely way more to him, I think, than just being the jerk that he is.
Yeah, I understand where he's coming from a lot more. So it makes his jerkishness more tolerable because I get the source.
Okay. And the last thing I kind of wanted to touch on in terms of abuse, I saw it when we were going through the episode, but when Veronica was staying at the Goodman house and the way that they dealt with the abuse, the scene where the mom makes the son follow her into her room and then Woody Goodman goes into a different room, I never noticed it before, but this time it kind of clicked for me that it's almost like the exact opposite of what happened in the Eccles house. And I thought it was just really interesting the way the lighting was. They put like soft lighting on things, and I don't know why I made that connection, but I thought it was really interesting that the mother was the abuser and that the father kind of ignored it and walked into a different room.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't make that connection at all.
Me neither. But I definitely picked up on the fact that it was the mother who was the abuser. Like I was saying before, with all the different types of abuse and everything that we saw, I'm really glad that they highlighted this one, because it's true that, you know, not all the time is it the father or the man who is the one that's abusing the children. The mothers can do it too. And while I think it's really sad that there wasn't a conclusion to this story and that, you know, something more didn't happen there, I'm really glad that they showed that different side so that people, you know, are maybe a little bit more aware that this can actually happen.
One thing I did notice was that it didn't really look like Gia had dealt with that, because when her brother knocks the glass over and he freaks out to clean it up, she's like, it's just water, like no concept of why he might be really upset. So I thought that was interesting too.
Yeah, definitely. I'm wondering if something must have happened between, like, when Gio was, you know, a kid, okay, and then when her little brother is now, like, to the mother, if something happened to make her change so much. But it's also interesting, it makes me wonder if Gio doesn't know anything about the abuse. Like, not only did she not experience it, but she might not even be aware her mother has a different side like that.
I think you're right. I don't think she knows at all, because they said that she had been gone for a while. So maybe the mother, I guess, started developing these abusive tendencies while she was gone. And so it's like a lot of abusers do. They cover it so well that Gia doesn't pick up on it. Plus, Gia is not the brightest person. So I think that she just doesn't know.
Yeah, it sounds like she was at boarding school or something for a few years, but I agree with Danielle. She isn't the brightest person, as we'll get to in my favorite quote of the episode. And I don't know, maybe it's just the mom has a difficult time or is just more abusive towards a boy than she would be to a girl, with different expectations.
It makes you wonder about her relationship with her husband, which then makes you wonder about Goodman more. Mm-hmm. I think, which is interesting.
Especially now that he's mayor.
Yes.
It's a little unnerving, but yeah. I think we hit pretty much everything on the abuse. I really enjoyed the storyline. I think it could have been dealt with a little bit better, but yeah, I think it was done well.
But then again, you know, we saw like, what, 3-ish different stories of child abuse. There's no way, realistically, that Veronica would be able to wrap up and solve each one. So like you said, I wish that it had been dealt with, but I can understand why they sort of left it open like that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay, so moving on to Logan. So in this episode, we find out that he lied about the witness. Why do you think he did that? Like, he lied that he didn't see the witness, and then he turns around and says, oh, that wasn't him.
I don't know. I mean, unless he's protecting... Well, didn't he say that he didn't want them to track down the witness? So maybe that means he is trying to cover up something that he did?
Yeah, I think he's scared of what he might have done. I think he just honestly doesn't remember. But I think that in itself is really sad, that he thinks he could have been violent to that extent. It makes me sad that he thinks that of himself, because I don't think that Logan could have been violent based on what he went through. I think seeing his mother be at least emotionally abused and himself being physically and emotionally abused, I don't think he could have done that. So I think it says more about Logan's self-esteem and how Logan relates to his father than it does about if he actually killed Felix or not.
Well, and that also came right on the heels of Veronica thinking he was capable of killing Lily. Like, that was within, like, a day. Mm-hmm. So he had all of these people just assuming that he could be violent, messing with his head. So I saw it as probably being a matter of self-preservation, whether it was because, like he said, that he was free and clear when the witness didn't show up, or that he might have done something that he doesn't remember. But I'm with Gabrielle. That does make me sad that he thinks that of himself, because I was so mad at Veronica for thinking him capable of that, because I don't think he's capable of that. So it does make me sad, too.
I agree. So then why do the Fitzpatricks want people to think that Logan was the killer? Like, why would they, or how did you kind of parse through what was going on with the ties to the PCHers? And why they would plant a Fitzpatrick informant or puppet as the witness.
I'm going to say right now, I have no idea. So I have no answers to this.
We don't know enough about the Fitzpatricks, I think. They just kind of showed up.
Other than that, they have terrible spelling.
I saw that. I think it was while you were watching the episode, correct? You had tweeted about how you lost respect for them because they incorrectly spelled the River Styx.
Yes, I was so impressed that they decided to name their bar the River Styx, which is from Greek mythology, and then they spelled it STIX, and I was like, no, this is just all, it's done.
It's wrong.
They are supposed to be meth heads, so maybe they're
spelled. I know. I mean, I wasn't, you know, hoping for a lot to begin with because of that, but I was disappointed.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. But yeah, I guess in terms of the PCHers and Fitzpatricks, it could be as simple as just back scratching. Kind of like how Veronica brought up in the episode when she was talking to Weevil. I guess we'll find out. Speaking of Veronica, does she need more girlfriends? Like, she looked so uncomfortable during that sleepover. I just wanted to give her a hug.
I would have been uncomfortable during that sleepover. Yeah. I mean,
seriously. Do you think it's the people itself, or do you think part of it might be because she doesn't have I don't want to say a lot of experience with girls, but like, because she doesn't have close girlfriends where she could do things sort of like that.
I think it was mostly the people that were there because they were kind of horrible. I mean, the only one that I really kind of like is Gia. I think she's kind of funny, but I don't know. I mean, Veronica just does so well hanging with the guys. I think that's her personality, and I don't find anything wrong with that. And I think the girlfriends that she does have, like Mac and when she was friends with Meg, I think that, you know, she was completely comfortable with them, and she didn't have a problem hanging out or anything like that. So I think it was mostly just the girls who were at that party.
I agree. Yeah, they were so catty, you know. Put a tattoo so they have something to look at on your chest. Like, that. Who wants to be friends with that at all? Gross. Yeah, no.
That was pretty bad. Although it was funny when they started talking about Gia dating Dick. She's like, I hated him for, like, ever.
My dick?
I love how Madison, though, like, I really do not like Madison Sinclair at all. But the fact that she didn't say anything to Veronica when Veronica walked in, she just gave her a look, was kind of growth. I mean, we have to applaud that, in a sense. That she wasn't a complete, you know what, by the way.
It's true. Oh, man. Okay. We also, in this episode, and even in the next one, we get to see more of Dick and Cassidy at home or interacting with people. Do they have any good influences? Or, like, does their lack of good influences make you a little bit more sympathetic towards them?
I disagree with Karen. I'm definitely sympathetic to them. In this episode, we saw their mom come and basically just want to get their money and just come for like a quick visit. And then when Cassidy asks if they could live with her, she's like, no, like we travel all the time. So just her lack of a mothering instinct really not surprised me, but made me sad for Cassidy and Dick. And also the fact that Kendall didn't want anything to do with them except like she was kind of cozying up to Dick. In a vaguely sexual way in order to get money just made me really sad because they don't have anyone they can trust or go to for advice.
Okay, three things. One, Dick is a dick. Oh my god, that was so gross with Kendall. Holy crap. Two, I actually did feel bad for him and kind of sympathized with him because unlike Cassidy, I feel like he kind of saw through his mother's crap and was like, no, I don't want to live with her. Like, obviously he knew more of what type of person his mother was than Cassidy did. So I was kind of cool with that. I liked that part. And then three, I think Cassidy, I don't know how, but he managed to turn out way better than his brother did. And even though he doesn't have any good influences, he's kind of like a good influence to himself because he does have a heart. And I think that he's very naive, but you can't necessarily blame him for that. And so I'm just glad that, yeah, he didn't turn out exactly like his brother.
Yeah, I have a very hard time feeling sympathy for Dick just because he's so unlikable. Just if he had even a modicum of likability about him, I would probably feel bad for him, but I see nothing redeeming about him, so I have a hard time feeling bad for him. Cassidy, on the other hand, is less of an ass, so I do feel more sympathy toward him because he found a way to be a somewhat decent human being despite all the bad things in his life, so I'm far more sympathetic to him.
Understandable. Okay, and our last point for this episode is missing Wallace. I miss Wallace very much. I love Wallace, and I know you guys do too. Do we think he is kind of justified in not responding to Veronica after everything that's happened, or do we wish that he would, just to say that he was okay or something?
I think he needs a little while to kind of get his head back on straight. And while I think it is really sad that he's ignoring her, I do kind of see where he's coming from. And I think he probably just needs to sort through everything. And once he does, I think he's going to come back with a much better hold on everything that he's had, and maybe he'll be able to talk to Veronica and tell her more of like what he's feeling and how he feels and stuff like that. But you know, I also think that this is kind of good for Veronica because, like I'll talk about later, she doesn't get enough people that call her out on her crap. And she does take advantage of people and she does sort of do her own thing. And I'm kind of glad that he's letting her stew for a little bit and letting her think about what she's done. She needs that.
You think about what you've done. All right. So yeah, we'll hopefully see Wallace again. We'll hear from him again. So that's pretty much it for Nobody Puts a Baby in a Corner. So let's just do our favorite scene and favorite lines. My favorite scene was taken by Gabrielle, so I had to regroup and find another one. So it is Veronica leaving her first babysitting job, and the dad comes out behind her and is giving her money and then is asking her if she would like to smoke up with them on Saturday, and then also hands her a violent drawing that the kid was doing, I guess, while she was babysitting him. And it's just so ridiculous. It makes me laugh every time.
Because he just lists it with, like,
yeah,
potential jobs. Like, and then do you want to come smoke a J with us? And then you could work on Sunday. Like, what?
Yeah. Like, we have standing plans on Friday nights, and then you can come smoke a J on Saturday. It's like, what? Oh, it's so good. So, Gabrielle, your favorite scene.
My favorite scene, which also happened to be yours, I'm sorry. was kind of from when the beginning of the episode, so when Veronica's quoting the dude and Duncan's just kind of looking on bewildered, to then when Logan walks in, has this whole awkward conversation about like safe words with them, and you know, it's just so glib and obviously hurting but disguising it with sarcasm. And he, I don't know, I feel like he and Veronica have the best lines of this episode, so I just love the banter and they brought it.
Yes, I agree. So I liked it too. Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was towards the very end when Lam pulls off to the side of the road and uncuffs Veronica and Duncan and just pretty much without a word lets them go, and then just goes right back to the Mannings. Like, pretty much nothing is said, but there's so much said in that moment about him, and just it changed my mind about him so completely. So I really enjoyed that.
That's a good one. And Karen, what's yours?
My favorite scene was when Logan calls out Duncan on his possibly shady meetup with Kendall, because I feel like I said before, Logan just kind of gets things. He understands things right away, and he knows the type of person that Kendall is. And it's so obvious that he cares a lot about Veronica still. And even though Duncan is his best friend, you know, if he's hurting Veronica, he's not going to get away with it. And so I really appreciated that.
Can we talk real quick about whether they are best friends still? Because I haven't really seen a lot of bromance stuff between them, except for the video games in two episodes ago. I mean,
yeah,
do you guys
that's
think
true.
That they're still besties? Or?
Yeah, I didn't really see that scene as very altruistic either, like looking out for Veronica. I thought that was very selfish. Like, you know, he still has feelings for Veronica, so he's gonna call out her boyfriend the minute he gets a chance. So I find it interesting that it could be taken either way.
Yeah, I see. I definitely saw it as altruistic, but I see where you're coming from. I just think that it was because just because he's calling Duncan out doesn't necessarily mean that Veronica's going to flock to him right away, because she obviously is still very hurt over a lot of the things that he's done, and she knows the kind of person that he is. So I don't know. But yeah, in terms of them being best friends, that is a good question. I think that I still think that they are, but at the same time, there's a lot between them that they need to fix. And I think that they've just been through so much together that it's hard to, like, break that off completely. I still think there's a lot of hard feelings, but at the same time, you can't forget all the stuff that they've been through together and how long that they've known each other.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that they still believe that they're best friends, but not in the same way, because they've been through so much and because maybe they don't have another person who could be their best friend. I think that maybe they're just clinging to each other like that. But yeah, no, that's an interesting question. I didn't think about that before, but I don't know. All right, favorite lines. Mine was from Veronica when she entered Gia's house. She says, "Don't judge me for my Ninja Turtles." And I just like it because I like that she has Ninja Turtles stuff.
Yes, that's the best. Although I'm kind of surprised it's not unicorns.
True.
Very true.
Very true. Let's see. Gabrielle, your favorite line, please. So
I think this was also Caitlin's, so I apologize.
Quote stealer.
I know. Well, when you make the show notes, you get to kind of do it first. Well, so this is between Gia, Mrs. Hauser, and Veronica. So Gia goes, "Mrs. Hauser, mine's wrong, but isn't this a flower?" Mrs. Hauser, "No, Gia, chlamydia is not a flower." And then Gia goes, "Well, we have it on, like, a trellis at our beach house." Veronica, "Your trellis is a whore."
Did this sex ed scene remind anybody else of Mean Girls?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
You will get chlamydia and die.
And I'm not sure if this came out before Mean Girls or not. I can't even remember. But Gia is, like, one of my new favorite characters because she's just so funny. And I'm not a huge Kristen Ritter fan. Like, I didn't watch any of her other shows. But she's just so great in Veronica Mars.
I agree. She's too good. I can't see anybody else really playing Gia as well as she does. Let's see. Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
Since I had to pick another one, because Gabrielle stole that one, mine was when Logan and Kendall were finishing their hookup and she was wanting a bit more because her husband was gone. Logan says, "Wow, so your feelings have grown as your available balance has shrunk. It's like science." You're such a smartass. It's so great.
I love how he calls her Bessie, too. Oh, my God.
It's so terrible, but it's so good. And Karen, what was your favorite line?
Well, to sort of go, like, in the completely opposite direction here, this is right after Lam cuffs Duncan and Veronica, and Meg's father says something along the lines of, "You can't just come in here and, like, snoop around my house," and blah, blah, blah. And Lam says, "It's funny. I heard my father give that exact speech once." And I'm not even kidding you. My jaw dropped and I gasped and I was so shocked. And like I said before, this is just excellent writing because they didn't state it directly, but we now know that Lam was abused when he was younger. And, you know, you just... it opens up so much about a person when they say a single line like that, and then the actions that they do afterwards with him dropping the kids off and going back to the house, it says so much about a person, and it was just really, really sad, but also a really excellent scene.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, so let's move on to episode 8, Ahoy Mateys. And here is your quick synopsis. Duncan is dreaming about Meg and Veronica, while Veronica and Logan team up to investigate Dr. Griffith further. Meanwhile, Keith is hired by one of the families of the bus crash victims, Marco, to investigate who has been harassing them. Through Mac, Veronica learns that he was host of a popular radio show about Neptune High, which was called Ahoy Mateys. He and his fellow host Butters, Clemens' son, rallied against the school and its people until he unexpectedly quit due to being sent to an anti-gay camp. Keith discovers that the father planted at least one of the props, while Veronica discovers that the rest were by his friend Ryan, who had a crush on him. They go to investigate the one blemish on his record in the form of Danny Boyd. When Veronica goes undercover and talks to Boyd, she is dragged into the River Styx, the Fitzpatrick's hangout. She is soon discovered and almost tattooed and choked when Logan saves the day with his gun. Veronica and Logan escape, but she is visibly shaken and angry at him. Logan is kidnapped by masked men who play Russian roulette with his body parts to find out more about the night on the bridge. Logan learns that Weevil called the shots, and Duncan opens Meg's letter. It's on. So, where should we begin? Let's begin with the love triangle that is going on and becoming ever more present as we go through season two. So we have this love triangle between Veronica, Duncan, and Meg. And it almost seems as if Meg is hiding something, especially with that letter that's at the end. But I don't know. What are your feelings about Meg? Does this give maybe another, is it like mysterious that maybe we don't know everything about her that we think we do?
It makes me kind of sad because I really liked the version of Meg that was sort of this sweet and innocent person and was like one of the only O-Niners that would give Veronica the time of day. And I mean, yeah, I guess like her character's becoming more three-dimensional now, but it's sad to see a lot of that innocence sort of fall away. And I don't really know what to think about it, but I almost threw my remote at the TV at the end of this episode because I was so mad that I don't know what's in that letter yet.
I think in the wake of the last episode, it makes a lot more sense now that we kind of have a hint of what Meg's life was like possibly growing up, so that maybe that innocence was a facade of self-preservation somehow, so that there's more underneath. It makes a lot more sense now that we've had that abuse storyline.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And a lot of these glimpses of Meg, because she's not on the screen, so we find out things from her family, but we also find out a lot about her through Duncan. And I think one of the best ways that we see his relationship with her is through his dreams. At the beginning of the episode, we get a dream where she's this complete angel and Veronica is basically like a devil. She's dressed dark. I think she may or may not have horns. And then at the end, we get another dream where Meg and Duncan are sleeping together and she again is dressed in white, is innocent, and she's asking him to save her. So what do we think about these dreams that he's having?
I'm not sure, because for me, I was very confused with the dream at the end, because we had never been given any information that they had progressed to sex in their relationship, because I thought of Meg as very innocent and pure and, you know, white as the angel, as we see in the first dream. So I'm not sure if the second dream is trying to tell us something, that Duncan and Meg were more serious than we had thought, or if it was just a metaphor for something else.
That's what I was wondering, too, because I was like, what if in the letter she was like, oh, I was pregnant and I got an abortion or something like that. And like, you know, her parents would obviously kill her if she did something like that. But I don't know what to think about it. But it's really interesting that Duncan is dreaming about her so much. And I kind of wonder if he's going a little crazy again, because, you know, that's more than a possibility.
I was wondering if it was related to a sense of survivor's guilt, and that he couldn't save her because he was, you know, she was on the bus and he wasn't. So maybe it's belated, you need to save me now, you still have a chance. And if it's just his sense of guilt, I'm not sure. I wasn't really sure how to read that.
Do we think it's weird that he seems to be more attracted to the angel in his dreams, or Meg, than he does to Veronica. So do you think he doesn't like how Veronica has changed? Or do you think he's attracted to that?
I think that's definitely a possibility. I hadn't thought about that before, but we were saying how Meg was like the old Veronica. And so that was kind of one of the reasons we thought Duncan was into her to begin with. So now that Veronica's changed so much, you know, it's kind of like they're both hanging on to what they had before and not looking at what's in front of their face right now.
which is really sad. But I think you're right. I think, and he sees like this new Veronica as a devil, but yet I don't think he's, I think he's comfortable with where he is, so he doesn't get out of it. I don't know. And so does anybody have any sort of prediction, I guess, of what was in that letter that Duncan opened? Because I know Karen mentioned something like, I'm pregnant and I got an abortion. Are there any other guesses?
I got nothing.
Fair enough. I mean, fine. I just thought I would ask.
I'm calling babies right now. It's going to be babies.
All right. I will mark it down. 10:54 a.m. Yeah. No, got it.
Or Meg is a secret lesbian.
There's your other one. She's in love with Veronica.
Exactly. And this was the episode with the Pray Away the Gay Camp. So it all adds up.
Oh, gosh. Do we want to skip ahead a little bit and talk about that Pray Away the Gay Camp?
About how...
Yet another instance that we see of, I guess, deprogramming almost.
And how completely absurdly dumb it is. Oh, my God. I got so angry during this episode.
Yes. Oh my God, yes.
I felt so bad for him because he couldn't even figure out, you know, he was trying to figure out his sexuality and his parents basically put a stop on that. And then he had to get rid of his only good friend, whether or not he was gay or not. And then he died. And I was like, oh, this is a sucky life that this kid has. So I kind of cried for him a little bit.
I just think it's terrible. I hate how all of these parents think they need to have their kids programmed. Like, as we saw in the previous episode with the child abuse, you are influenced by how your family life is, but I feel like these parents are programming their children instead of influencing them. And when they have to actually, I guess, literally program them, it just makes me so upset.
It's like weird Stepford in the 09er zip code going on. Like, these parents need to have their children be perfect so that they fit in socially appropriately with that standing. And if you are trying to move up into that standing, you can't have anything like a gay child that might mess that up. So it's like appearances are so important. And that just feeds into the race relations issues that are going on, and it's fascinating but also really sad.
See, I didn't see Marcos's family as being 09ers. I thought they were more on the poorer side of the tracks, just from what Veronica has said before. Also, if he was an 09er, people would have known him a little bit more, I think. So I saw it more as just their culture, maybe, or just how their parents thought about gays versus them trying to move up in the social ladder.
But it's also really sad because from what we hear from Mac and what we hear from Butters, Marco was a pretty strong person. Like, yes, he may have been a little quiet in public, but he also started this radio show, which may or may not have been a good idea. But he was a strong person. And then I guess his family goes to mess with him. But he loves his parents so much that he goes through with it. Which I think is also really sad. It's kind of tragic. Let's see. Do we think that Marco will come up again? Like, because he was a bus crash victim?
It's possible, I guess. You know, they spent a whole episode on him, so I think it's really interesting, but I don't know. I kind of wonder if this is just going to be a one and done sort of thing. As we kind of go through and maybe get to know the other victims more, and we'll sort of put together like the lies of these people that we didn't know beforehand.
Would you like to see more of Marco?
Yeah, I think that would be cool. I mean, he's an interesting character, even though we've never really met him. But I think that, you know, considering everything that happened after his death, it's interesting to see that and, you know, Yeah, it'd be cool to maybe see his parents come to terms with who their son was.
Yeah, if they have more story for that, go for it. There's a foundation for something interesting.
I have a question for you guys. I forget Marco's friend's name, but the one that knew that he was gay. How did you guys feel about him putting that stuff around Marco's house and sort of harassing his parents? Were you okay with it, or did you think that was wrong?
I thought it was wrong. I think his friend's name was Ryan, and I could obviously he was hurting as well because he seemed to really like Marco, and really, you know, he wanted to see if something could have happened between them. But that doesn't give him the right to harass his grieving parents, regardless of, you know, their homophobia. I don't think anyone should harass someone who's grieving, regardless of their other actions.
I feel that way too. Yeah, like there's a line, and as upset as you are and placing blame as you might be, like the grieving parents is a line.
And I mean, it's revenge. There's nothing good that could come of it. There's nothing, it's not going to make Ryan feel any better. It's not going to bring Marco back. I think it was the wrong thing to do.
This is going to make me sound like a horrible person.
No, it's fine.
I mean, I absolutely think that it was wrong, but I'm not sorry that he did it. So, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't do anything like that, I don't think, but I can really see where he's coming from. And just being from sort of thinking of it from his point of view, I would be so angry, and I can really understand why he did it, and I'm not entirely sorry that he did.
Considering the parents, or at least the dad, then tried to take advantage of it, like, that loses sympathy points.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was definitely wrong. It was, I don't know. I didn't like that at all. Let me see. But there was a little bit of a funny moment in dealing with Marco's storyline, and that was Veronica trying to not set up, but put together Butters and Mac. I thought that was funny at the door, and the vice principal was like, okay, well, this is good.
I mean, props to Mac for really running with that one, but I felt really bad for her.
Veronica owes her big time. I would be mortified if that had happened to me and in front of the mm-hmm. vice principal, no less. Veronica really owes her, and I think I love their friendship, and in this episode we get the whole Q and Bond dynamic come up, which made me really happy as a super fan to see that. But I think, again, it's kind of an example of Veronica using someone, and I think I respected Mac a lot more for kind of saying to Veronica, like, you owe me, and, like, this is not okay. So I like how she stood up for herself, even though she went along with it.
Yeah, I think that's where kind of Wallace and Mac differ, is that Mac is more willing to call Veronica on her crap a little bit. So that helps that dynamic more, that she's willing to, but Veronica really does take advantage of the people in her life.
All right. Let's move on to the interrogation, I guess we'll call it. That Weevil kind of set up for Logan. So why do you think that they interrogated Logan, or they interrogated him the way he did?
Because they are pissed.
Do you think that, I guess if they would have found something out from Logan, do you believe that they probably would have just killed him instead of dealing with the law or anything like that?
No.
Like, what was the end game, almost?
I think that they wanted to scare the crap out of him, and I think they did want to get to the truth, but we have to remember that even though these guys are tough, they're still high schoolers, they, you know, they have a whole life ahead of them, and yeah, I know that, like, gang members and stuff, you know, they kill people when they're like 12 and things like that. But to me, I see Weevil being a bit more responsible than that. And he's got, you know, a family to take care of and stuff, you know, his sisters and his grandmother and things like that. And I don't think that he would have gone that far.
I think Weevil is that way, but he seems to be losing his grip on his group. So I'm not sure what the people who actually abducted Logan would have done if they had found something that... Because Weevil, you know, is finding out these things are going on behind his back. So while I don't think Weevil would have condoned it, that's not to say that some of the other members of the group wouldn't have taken it into their own hands.
That's true. I want to know, do you guys think that the gun had any bullets in it? Were they actually playing Russian roulette with him, or were they faking him out?
I think they were faking him out. I think Weevil gave the orders to kidnap Logan and to scare him, but Weevil's not stupid, and I think killing Logan Eccles would have been a really stupid move, and it would have also had pissed off Veronica, even if she wouldn't want to admit it. So I don't think they had any bullets in it.
I don't think so either, for the same reason. But because of the tensions, I believe that Logan, I would have been in the same, I guess, mindset as Logan, that it would be, that there would have been bullets in there, because these guys have been, they've beaten Logan, they burned down his house. So what would be holding some of these people back from shooting him?
If what they were trying to get to the bottom of wasn't so serious, because the fact is that someone died. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not just someone selling drugs or someone insulted someone's mama. Like, that's, someone is dead. So I keep hanging on to that. Like, I don't know, because I do think, because it is so serious that a kid is dead, that I can see it actually, like, there could have been one bullet in there or something, like, just because of how serious that is.
Fair enough. Yeah. Let's see. Speaking of guns, Logan once again saves Veronica. It kind of mirrors that scene from Weapons of Class Destruction back in season one, where he busts in and basically kind of, well, he busts in and he saves her, but in like a bravado kind of way. Did you guys enjoy that scene? Did you like seeing Logan and his protectiveness come back?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was very sexy. That was a Logan Eccles sexy moment, of which there are many. I thought it was a little stupid of him, and I think he should have actually called 911 before he went in there. But I mean, it was just him being a protector and him being like a teddy bear. And I love those moments. And I understood Veronica's response when they got out of there and how upset she was at him. But I love Logan Eccles, and I loved that moment. I thought it showed that he really still cared about Veronica.
Yeah, I mean, that was a very stupid thing to do, to go in there with all of those gang members and stuff. But, you know, if he's going to do it for anybody, it would be for Veronica.
I had the same reaction as Veronica did, like, a gun? What the hell are you thinking, Logan? Like, I loved the protectiveness, but the minute he pulled out the gun, I was like, what are you doing? Like, so I just had the exact same reaction Veronica did.
See, I had a reaction to Veronica's reaction. I feel like, yes, it was terrible that he was, like, toting a gun, but of everything to kind of break down about, that just happened, it was Logan with a gun. I don't know if that was kind of like, she was upset about everything else, but that was the first thing that came out when she started like talking to him or yelling to him. But I just thought it was kind of weird. Like, I would have freaked out about everything else before I would have freaked out about Logan having a gun.
Yeah, she was kind of messed up. I think that, like, I really wanted a little bit of redemption in her eyes for what he did, and I'm sort of afraid that she's maybe a little bit scared of him now or something like that. So it is kind of sad, but I do see where she's coming from. But at the same time, you know, he did just save your life. You could try not yelling at him for 2 seconds.
Right?
Logan is, like, a known commodity, though. Like, the gang members are less so. That's kind of, like, almost abstract in a way. Like, it's hard to wrap your head around that that just happened. But it's really easy to latch onto. This guy that I really care about, have feelings for, had a gun. Like, what the hell? Like, that's so much easier to latch onto, I think.
At the same time, though, her dad carries a gun. Like, I don't think Logan's carrying a gun to shoot people. I think I believed him when he said he was carrying it to protect himself, as misguided as that is, and I think as illegal as that is, given his age. But I don't think he's going to go all wacko on anyone or just, like, try to shoot PCHers. I think it is for protection. And so if Keith has one and he only uses it for protection, and Veronica has a taser, and I think her dad would give her a gun if she was old enough, I thought she overreacted a little bit, given the circumstances.
I get, like, the protection thing, and clearly after his house burned down, he needs some kind of protection, but stuff can go bad so quickly when there's a gun involved, so I just only see that being a bad thing.
Isn't it like a movie trope that the first person to have, who's shown with a gun or shown with a knife, like, it's kind of like a, usually a nail in the coffin of that character?
Like, you show a gun within the first act, it needs to go off by the end of the third act or something
like that.
Don't say that, Logan!
I'm just saying in general. It's usually a rule. The gun itself usually comes back to haunt whatever's going on, no matter if it was purchased for violence or for protection.
Yeah. So, like, I get it, but I just only see bad things coming from it.
Right. Yeah, I understand that completely. So because of this gun and because of, I guess, her reaction to Logan, do we see any sort of friendship coming back? Because in the first season when he saves her, we kind of see, it's almost like a climax of their relationship. Do we see something sort of similar or like a glimpse of that here, or is it completely different?
I hope she realizes that Logan just gets her a lot more than Duncan does. And I hope she realizes how much Duncan, or how much Logan, has been there for her when Duncan hasn't necessarily. And so I think that, I don't know, I'm really hoping that once she sort of gets over what's happened and realizes that Logan didn't do anything wrong, it's really going to change the way that she thinks about him. And I hope that Logan can sort of, you know, stop being a jerk, because he has been kind of terrible these last few episodes in some parts. And I think that, you know, once that happens, maybe they can sort of rekindle their friendship and kind of bear to be in the same room with each other for longer than 5 minutes without arguing.
Fair enough. And I guess my last question is, do we think Veronica is too reckless with her life? Because it was not smart of her to try to follow meth heads or to try to follow people who are dealing drugs. And especially like when she's being led into the bar, that I feel like that was very reckless. Like there should have been some sort of way out of that. But do you think that she's being too reckless at this point?
I think so. I mean, last season we saw her trust Keith towards the end and tell him what was going on, and he helped out and they solved the mystery together. We haven't yet seen her rope in Keith on Logan's case, maybe because she knows how her dad feels about Logan. But at the same time, I think she should realize, well, my dad just told me I went into a cigar shop or known as a front for the Fitzpatricks, and these people are dangerous. So I think she has to realize she's not invincible, and that people really care about her and are willing to help her, and that she's only, you know, an 18-year-old girl. At the end of the day, she's not a superhero, and she has to accept that.
I don't know if I would call her reckless. It almost seems naive to me, which is a weird thing to call Veronica for everything that she's seen, but it almost seems like she doesn't think that the worst could happen. Like, just doesn't, even though these people have died around her a lot and she had almost died, it just doesn't seem like it quite connects that going back there could be dangerous. Like, and it almost just seems naive, which is weird to me for her, but that's how it comes across to me.
See, I agree and disagree with that. I agree that, like, I wouldn't actually call her reckless. I don't think she's purposely putting herself in danger, you know, like that, like how you would typically think of a reckless person to do. But I think that instead of being naive, I think she just feels a lot more confident than she actually should. And she thinks she's going to be able to sweet talk her way out of these situations. And she can't always do that, especially when you're dealing with, you know, people like the Fitzpatricks. And I really hope that this was a wake up call to her that, you know, she has to think about what she's doing a little bit more, because she's just a kid in high school still. And, you know, something really bad could happen if she doesn't realize that she's not always going to be able to lie and bat her eyelashes to get out of situations like this.
Or even realize that she's not invincible.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, so I think that is pretty much it for Ahoy Mateys. So we will move into our favorite season, favorite lines. My favorite scene was, I guess, it's not that I enjoyed it, but I thought it was an interesting insight into sort of Logan, because we haven't seen this side of him before. But when he was being tortured, we see that vulnerability come back. And I don't know, I just really enjoyed that scene for that reason.
It was so intense.
Mm-hmm.
I was freaking out.
It's just good. It's just, we see him and we also get the feeling that he is telling the truth. Like, we never really know what's going on, because it's all told through flashbacks, what happened on the bridge. But he's being tortured and he's continually saying that he doesn't know. So I feel like it's just, we believe him, but now we have kind of more proof that he's telling the truth because he was being tortured. Gabrielle, what was your favorite scene?
This isn't hard to guess, but it was the River Styx scene. I was genuinely terrified for Veronica, and I was bashing my head against the wall because I was just like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? How could she be this stupid? And also I was pissed at Molly, the girl from her school, for revealing who she was. I thought that was just really rude. I mean, I understood it, but I was just mad at her. And then I loved Logan jumping in and saving the day, of course.
All right. So then, Caitlin, what was yours?
Mine was when Mac and Veronica were confronting Butters, and my note in the doc says, take that, you chauvinistic ass, because he was making all these really obnoxious comments about women. And Mac was like, I am not having your crap about this at all. So he was like, the girls were in power in that entire scene, and he was kind of like cowering before them, which I just loved.
Oh, it was wonderful. I love that too. Karen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when Veronica and Mac were in the computer room and they were looking at the Ahoy Mateys stuff for the first time. And Veronica's asking her question after question, favor after favor. And Mac's just like, look, I'm wondering how long we can have a conversation without you asking me a question. And Veronica's like, oh. And Mac sort of just calls her out on her endless favor asking. And it's something that Wallace doesn't do enough. And I was really glad that, you know, she did that, because Veronica really needs that reminder every once in a while.
Yeah, that you can't always use your friends just for favors.
Right.
Yeah. No, I like that too. All right. So then, favorite lines. So mine comes when they show up at the vice principal's house and he answers the door and Veronica says, I'm glad we caught you at home. Can we use your phone? We're both in a bit of a hurry. And I love this line because it is from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, That exact line is from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is one of my favorite movies ever. I actually just went to like a live screening 2 nights ago. And so when I heard them say that, it made my day. It's my absolute favorite thing from this episode.
I didn't know that was from Rocky Horror Picture Show. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's from the song that comes right after the Time Warp. It's from Sweet Transvestite, if that means anything. But yeah, yeah, it's Rocky Horror Picture Show. And the way she phrases it is like in the same vein. I don't know. It's wonderful.
That's amazing.
Yes, I love it. I never caught it before, I don't think, but I caught it this time. But yeah. So, Gabrielle, what was your favorite line?
So I think this was also Caitlin's, and I apologize.
This is everyone's ever, Gabrielle. I hate you so much for this.
Sorry. So this is Logan to Veronica, and his hands are kind of in a praying gesture. And he says, "Help me, Marzwan Kenobi. You're my only hope." Loved it. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, so it made me very happy.
I loved the part right before it, too, when he's like, "I really don't want a bottom bunk and Fisty McRapes a lot cell."
Oh, Logan.
Like, that just whole scene is so great.
So good. So, Caitlin, since you couldn't have that line, what was your favorite line?
So, mine came right before Danielle's, when they're walking up to the house, and Veronica says, "Excellent work as usual, Q." And Mac replies, "Right back at you, Mr. Bond." Like, I love their relationship. They're just cute, and I love them as friends, and they have a great dynamic.
They're so wonderful. Karen, favorite line?
Mine feeds right into that, actually, or I should say mine feeds into yours, Caitlin, because mine comes right before yours, but it's when Veronica says, "Wait, what if nerd hunters drive by and trank and tag me?" And Mac goes, "That's a risk I'm willing to take."
It's so cute. I love the two of them together. And it's not really a spoiler, but we will see them working together more. And it just makes me happy.
I like seeing people who are just like on Veronica's level, like getting to banter with her, like Logan and then Mac. Like, you just need more people who can keep up with her and then just have all that good banter.
Yeah, it's really nice to see when characters do that, because a lot of times her relationship or her conversations with other characters are really one-sided. And so, like you said, I enjoy seeing it coming kind of from both sides. But all right, so we have just one piece of listener feedback for you today. Gabrielle, would you like to take this one?
Sure. So this is from our Twitter. And it's from Mariah Lovegood. I love your Twitter name, by the way. And she says, "Can't wait to hear your thoughts on the Wallace drama." So I hope we did that. And we miss Wallace, too. So you're in good company.
Can I just say that I love that his father is played by LaVon Hayes from Heart of Dixie? I don't know if anyone watches Heart of Dixie.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I
love
him. I'm always just, whenever I see him, I'm like, LaVon Hayes, the linebacker. He's so adorable in Heart of Dixie, so it's hard to make the connection.
I've seen it, I think, like once. I think I saw one or two episodes, and now that you say that, I can place him from that. So that's funny. So does that kind of paint a different character for you? Like, do you have a sort of crossover on characters because you've seen him in something else?
Yes, because LaVon is, like, my favorite character, basically, in the show. And he is a complete and utter sweetheart. He's just the best, and I just love him so much. So I'm like, please be, you don't even have to be as awesome as LaVon, just even like half as awesome. So I just hope you're really not as skeezy, because I love LaVon.
Yeah, he totally creeps me out. I've never seen Heart of Dixie, but on this show, he totally creeps me out. I don't trust him at all.
Well, you should watch Heart of Dixie, because he's precious.
All right. So if you want to write into us, please do. We love reading them. We love responding. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can also comment on this post on Hypeable, because we will be refreshing it and reading everything and hoping to interact with you. So bring up good discussion points and we'll be ready to talk with you. And you can also leave us a review on iTunes. I don't have an incentive from Ariana for you this week, but just leave us a review on iTunes and we'll love you forever. That's as best as I can do. I'm not as clever as she is, unfortunately. But, so yes, please do. Other than that, I think that pretty much is everything we have to talk about for these two episodes. So we will leave you to continue watching, and we will meet you back here next time. So I'm Danielle.
I'm Gabrielle.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Karen.
And we'll see you later, marshmallows.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.